This brings me to the speaker. So please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Norm S. from Wynnewood, Pennsylvania. What is your home group?
Huh?
What is your home group?
It's still South College Speakers Group.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that.
No worries. All right. Good evening. I'm Norm. I'm an alcoholic. Those are some of the easiest words I've ever had to say. You know, they get easier with every day that I'm in this program and I'm doing the deal. Now, for me, my sponsor always said, when you're asked to speak, you always say yes. It's a selfless act. It pays dividends. But you're doing it because you're carrying something forward that was paid forward freely to you. For me, I'm so happy I'm here. I mean, my life right today is pretty damn good. I want for nothing. I live in chaos, but yet I'm going to see it calm sometimes in that chaos. And the only reason I can say that today is because I don't sweat the drink on a daily basis. I haven't had a compulsion drink in a long time, and it's because of this program. For me, tonight I'm not going to blast you with wonderful, amazing drunk log where I fell out of a plane or there was a sword fight or there's some really interesting thing. I'm as garden variety drunk as you could possibly get. My story is very, very average and pedantic, but you know what? I was always told that sometimes there's somebody in here that had the same sort of average, relatable story, and that might help them stay another day and listen, maybe get the miracle. So I can only give what I have. And for me, what I have is experience with working the 12 steps of AA. What I'm told is that I'm going to share a little bit of what it was like, what happened, and then really focus on what it's like today, how I live my life. And really what I'm going to do is probably fill the next 50 minutes until the real meeting happens for you guys, because that's what happened for me. So I was, I got sober in June 15, 2006. I have a sponsor. He's gone through the 12 steps. I know he's my sponsor. He knows that I'm his sponsee. And today I actively work with other people in this program. I take them through the steps as well. Like I said before, I got sober when I was pretty young. I was about 21 years old. I wasn't just about. I had just turned 21 that day that I got sober. So my legal drinking history was actually relatively short. It was a matter of hours. But my story doesn't necessarily start on the day I stopped drinking. My story doesn't really start on the day that I even took my first drink. The story stopped on how I started when I realized what alcohol could do for me without even going and being put into my body. And that was, for me, fulfilled a void that I desired to feel different. I enjoyed the effect produced by alcohol, whether it was in my body or whether it was the idea that eventually I was going to get it in my body. So when I was young, I was a gopher for my dad. You know, I would go down and grab a beer, and I just remember going down and being big enough and empowered enough to go and get that alcohol and give that to him during a football game, and I just remember feeling so much like the big boys. Again, something that I'm not, and that's going to be a constant theme in my story tonight, is alcohol's doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And very similar, that God can do for me today what I couldn't do for myself. But I just remember going there and feeling the first time that I ever put the beer to my lips, you know, when I was about 4 years old, just taking a swig and just feeling like, man, I can't say that I ever felt the effect of the alcohol, but I knew what that alcohol did to me, because now I'm part of you. I'm one of you guys. You know, and again, 4 years old, didn't think anything of it. I thought that, hey, I'm like you guys. I'm now up to your level. I'm a guy dominated by fear, thousands of forms of fear. You know, whether or not my facade on the outside really shows it inside, I'm thinking, I walk into a room and I know that you guys are talking about me. I know you guys are looking at me, judging me. Right now, you know, am I saying the right things? Am I this? Am I that? And that's how I lived my life for at least 21 years of my life. It did. And I look at it today as a simple reminder that I can easily go back to that if I'm not on spiritual grounds. Fast forward to the first time I actually did take a real drink, and that was I was in high school. And for me, my drinking career was, again, relatively short, but it was every time I drank, I got arrested or I got in trouble. That's just how I did it, because when I drank to go and feel the effect produced by alcohol. I didn't drink because I was happy or sad. It was just I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It did for me so many different things. And I always tell people who are like, why can't you just control it? I said, if you knew what it did for me and it did the same thing for you, you'd drink exactly like I did. That's what alcohol did for me. It filled that void. Took away, you know, it talks about that 9-step promise, right? You know, fear of financial insecurity, you know, that newfound freedom, all that stuff. That's what alcohol kind of did for me. Until it didn't. And eventually I started to drink over time to go and just get back on the level so I could just function. Now, my story is relatively straightforward. Within college is when I really started to be on my own, have a little bit of freedom, go out and actually do and drink the way I wanted to drink. And I found a group of guys everywhere I went who absolutely just made me think that's exactly how the world drank. To the absolute max, consequences be damned. It's all part of the game. You get arrested. Okay, that's just part of the game. You know, just move on. There's lawyers for that. There's police for that. There's fines for that. You'll make enough money. You'll figure it out. But I didn't let any of those things really get in my way because eventually, you know, I just knew that I was going to do whatever it took to just go and feel the way I felt and wanted to feel on a daily basis. I paid my first consequence when I got a DUI. First time that was actually a major consequence. I didn't care that I went and tore up people's houses. Again, part of the game. You invited me over. Sorry. It's on you. For me, I looked at it as, hey, you knew what you were getting into. I mean, I told you right from the front, who's going to take care of me tonight? I have no idea what's going to happen, but let's get ready. Just, you know, rubber room, make it happen. Let's just play cards, do something else, and, you know, just get prepared. You know, buckle up. First time, I was working on a freight dock for Old Dominion Freight Line, and my shift was like 5 in the morning till like 5 at night, and I remember having to get up every day about 3 o'clock in the morning to get there, but one of my college roommates came up during the summertime, and we tied one on. We really tied one on. My alarm went off about 2.5 hours early, which was only about an hour after I stopped drinking. I drove in a blackout about 45 minutes to get to work. And I woke up the next morning with cargo shorts on, with a stick of deodorant in my one pocket, to a phone call saying, we don't want you to come back. And I had no idea what happened. But here, I guess I got on a forklift and started just driving freight around on the dock. And I left I was leaving forklifts and trailers the entire night, and they had no idea where I was. And then someone just took pity on a guy. Like, yeah, I'm 18 years old. I'm 19 years old. They're just like, we're going to just drive you home. And that's how it was. And they just said, don't come back. And that kind of started being a consistent theme for me. But, of course, you know, it was only, July, I go back to school, you know, I'm going to be something very, you know, it's going to be better than you. It's cool. I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm going to have a really hot-ass wife. I'm going to have a great car. You'll see. I'm going to show up. It doesn't matter. It's a job. Whatever. I'll find another one. I'm smart. And I lied to my parents. Hey, where are you going? They don't need me anymore at work. They just said take the rest of summer off. We're really slow. That was good enough. Now, what I didn't tell you is that my father was a 17 years in recovery type of alcoholic. And my mother was an Al-Anoner for those 17 and a half years. So, you know, they're just like, okay. They're silently watching and they're looking at someone like me who's ready to go back to school. And, you know, I remember talking, sitting in the car and saying, hey, you know, coming and leveling with my dad about a week before going back to school and saying, you know, I got to tell you a secret. I got fired from the job. No, that wasn't, you know, I claim it didn't matter to me. But if it didn't really matter to me, I wouldn't have fought so hard to use, like, the American with Disabilities Act to try to have them send me to a part-time freaking job for a college guy. But, you know, again, it struck me in here. How dare you? Don't you know who I am? Again, I grew up on a farm. Like, we had nothing in terms of money. So, like, it wasn't like I was born jaded. I just truly had an ego. And that ego got and would devour anything possible. It always got out of control, but this was the first time it was ever checked. And I just remember my dad saying, well, don't be hasty. Don't necessarily go and jump to conclusions now. You might not be an alcoholic. I'm like, no, you know, it just scared me. You know, I don't remember anything. And it's like, well, you'll figure it out, won't you? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, how about you just don't drink for a little while? Let me know how that works out for a guy like you. I said, cool, that'd be fine. And I did that. I did it for about 3 weeks. And then I went back to school. And I didn't drink. And I can't tell you, I didn't sweat the drink. I didn't feel like I was absolutely miserable. And I was like, man, I conquered this shit. This is easy. So, I'm not an alcoholic. It's really easy. go back to school. First time I could go out and drink. We all think, I think everybody can read between the lines, see how that one ended up for me. I didn't necessarily go to jail, but it was one of those things where I drank to go get drunk. I drank as much as I possibly could. I used a guise of another excuse of why I did it. When in, right deep down, it was just, I wanted to get free. I wanted to get silent and invisible. I wanted to do whatever I possibly could just to get out of me. I had a very difficult time reconciling who I was. Because again, what made me special was I could always make things successful. I could always be successful. Look at my litany of amazing things on my resume. Look at who I am. You know, I was a double major, triple minor, 3.8 GPA. I ran three different organizations in college, and I'm going to be somebody. I can't be an alcoholic. That's for guys under bridges. That's for people like my dad, who's drinking and found underneath a baler somewhere, thinking he's dead. It's not me. I mean, people like that. People are not successful who are alcoholics. And, you know, I end up trying to go down every other possible avenue to fill myself up, but nothing ever filled me up like alcohol. I didn't dabble in drugs. I was afraid of drugs. I was definitely afraid. I thought anything lower than alcoholic, it was people who did drugs. I'm not like you. I am so much, I don't do that. Again, it's not part of my story, but the ego in it absolutely is, because you're going to see a constant theme. What drove that fear continued to drive the ego and just played off of each other. And one of those things that just, unchecked would, eventually get me to the point where I would constantly want to kill myself. Never really tell too many people that. Because I never was really sure I was man enough to go and try and actually do it. But if it was a byproduct of how I drank, and if it was just going to happen, I'd been okay with it. Towards the end, every day that I woke up, I just wanted to go and just have somebody feel the way I felt on the inside, which is just turmoil, which is just need. And I had no way or comprehension of how I was ever going to solve this. I wallowed in such misery for years, just over the idea that, you know, this is how it's just going to be. And I never put two and two together that had anything to do with alcohol. More importantly, I never put two and two together that was actually my self-centered fear. It was my self-loathing. It was any of the stuff that we learned in this program, which is really the true illness here. I never looked at alcohol as even being the solution. I drank because I loved it. Kept it as simple as that. Didn't want to dive too deep into it because I was afraid of what I was going to find out. Long and short of it, my drinking obviously took off, and I took probably about 2 months before I got sober. I had that little DUI that I had in Pennsylvania. I'm going through an ARD program, you know, all those first offenders programs and all that good stuff, and I just remember keeping my nose pretty clean, and then I'm in Delaware, and I'm doing a cancer walk from, like, I think Relay for Life. And I'm the president of that organization, and I just remember having a bottle because it couldn't miss the party that was like a block festival that day. And I just remember having a bottle there and giving a wonderful speech that I don't remember to all these people there who were walking for cancer, and then having the police officers come up right behind me because I'm a month away from my 21st birthday, saying that I'm drinking publicly and then taking me in for the hospital. And that was May. That was May 5th, 2006. I was really afraid. Because then I didn't eat for probably about 2 or 3 weeks, it felt like. Because I was afraid Pennsylvania was going to go find out about Delaware, and that Delaware was going to find out about Pennsylvania. And I'm a nervous wreck, and on the phone with the lawyer, and he's charging me every 15 minutes, and I don't know what to do. And that was pretty constant. And I'll never forget those feelings, because I got on my knees, because I heard a guy once in a meeting, because at that time I went to one meeting, I came about 15 minutes late, and I left about 15 minutes early, but I remember what that guy said. He said, God, I launched up a prayer, and I said, just kill me or make me whole. And I launched up that foxhole prayer on that 5th of May, and I remember saying, God, just can kill me or make me whole. I can't do this anymore. And I was really, really drunk that night, but I still remember it with very much, just amazing clarity. And I remember just not knowing what to do next. I started going to meetings, probably, again, 15 minutes late, about 15 minutes early, and I went to probably one meeting. Lady was up there, had 13 months of sobriety, was talking about how her parents trusted her to watch their kid. I'm like, that's not me. See ya. Didn't care. Wasn't ready. Didn't have enough pain. You know, I needed to go and try some more controlled drinking. And for me, that meant just abstinence until I white-knuckled it and made through misery until my last night of drinking, which was on my 21st birthday. Now, one thing other than my raging alcoholism that drove a guy like me and the effect produced by alcohol is the ability for other people to pay for me. I love being cheap, and I love it when people buy me stuff. And my 21st birthday was a great excuse to go out and finally drink the way that I wanted to the last 3 weeks. Delaware's bars close at 1 o'clock. I was found in a parking lot in a fire lane with my pants around my ankles at 1:30. My phone was in the officer's possession. My buddies were calling. The officer said, "Don't worry, he's safe. We're good." He didn't choke on his tongue. And he took me to Christiana Hospital, and I remember very vividly having the doctor come up to me, and I look and I see the IVs in my arms, and I go and I see the stuff that's around my throat, and I just remember just saying, I didn't die. Crap, what am I going to do now? Now, at this time I was on like double secret probation from the university, didn't want them to know that I was there, so I ripped all that stuff out and I tried to run out of the hospital buck-ass naked. I tripped through every possible wire through that thing, and I just remember falling into the corner and peeing myself. I love to have that little detail in there because look at me. A double major, triple minor, 3A GPA, president of organizations, going to be somebody, going to make a lot of money, be better than you. I'm covered in my own vomit and piss in the middle of a corner, and I just remember having another one of those moments of clarity, just saying, this is how it's going to be. This is how it's going to end. And I have no idea what I'm going to do, and the only other option I have is to go and kill myself. And I'm too much of a chicken shit to even do that. What am I going to do? And I just remember the lady saying, you were so lucky to be alive. I said, no, I'm not. I slept it off the complete next day. Didn't go into the work. I had a great internship with a very large company. Awesome internship. Paid really well. Didn't even care. Came in the following day and it was bad food poisoning. One of the great Rolodex of excuses that I could go through, that why I didn't show up or do certain things and shirked off my responsibilities. And they bought it, of course. I think everybody knew, read between the lines again. I'm so much smarter than everybody else, they would never pick up on my deceit. And what was really interesting about that is I just remember my mother coming down from Harrisburg that night. And this day was very impactful for me because there was Westminster House about a mile off of campus. And I just remember my mom coming down, and I got an email in my inbox, and the university found out about my arrest in the city of Newark, which violated my probation, which means that I was no longer going to be at the university. To most people, that says, okay, keep going. But for a guy like who hit his spiritual bottom, a guy like me who's an alcoholic of a hopeless variety, where it's really his whole ego is tied upon his spiritual being, and I had none left. I was leveled. That was the one thing that was going to set me apart from you. It was my ability to grow. It was the idea that I was going to be something more. And that finally was just completely shattered. There was nothing in this world that I really cared about anymore. And she came in right as I found that, and I gave her my 5-pack of beer that I had left. And I just said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And I was shaking so bad, and I was going through such withdrawal. She said, great, well, I'll take you out to dinner at least, and, you know, I mean, we'll figure this out. And, well, what she did was she ended up driving me to Westminster House, said, get the hell out of my car. What are you talking about? She goes, you're going to a meeting. Now in honor of 17 years, researched all the recent meetings that were in the area and knew that this was going to happen and said, get out of my car. I said, well, how am I going to get home? He's like, these are AA people. They're good people. You'll find a ride home. And then left and drove 2 hours back up to Harrisburg. Woman drove 2 hours down just to go and do that and prove a point to get out. And we're done. That was my introduction to AA, my formal introduction to AA. Now, of course, I cried pretty much the entire night. I did. I will absolutely admit it. I wasn't even in the meeting because I was such a disturbance. No one would even sponsor me into the meeting because I saw this guy, bigger dude, right? Somebody I wouldn't necessarily associate with, but he's putting big books on the front line, and I came in and I did the whole, you know, new guy shuffle, which is like looking at your feet. And I just remember this guy looking up. He says, man, how are you doing? And I said, man, I'm good. I'm good. He goes, nah, really, dude, you look like shit. I didn't know this guy at all. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I do. I wasn't even going to argue with him. And he just goes, see that guy over there? His name's Blake. He you go and you talk to Blake. And let's get you in an hour. You know, and Blake sat with me, and I bring up Blake because it was one of those things, no matter how much time you have in this program, you can be useful. You know, God'll use you in some way, some profound way. Now, Blake kept me there. You know, if I would have sat in that meeting, I probably would have left. If no one had talked to me, I probably would have left. If Blake didn't sit out there and keep me in that hallway and talk to me about everything that I was going through in a blubbery mess that probably made no sense in an incoherent manner, I don't know where I would have been. But that guy was there and would talk to me until the actual meeting happened, which was a bunch of guys converged on me, gave me a big book, gave me a list of numbers, and I was stupid enough to take it. And for some reason, these people were probably drunk on the crack-like coffee that was in the back because this stuff would stir itself, so caffeinated. And I'll never forget it because it smelled like a hill of beans, and I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And a bunch of people are coming up and saying, "So glad you're here." And I didn't know any of it. But I remembered vividly on who was there and who I could call. And I knew that help was there. For some reason, for that 5 minutes, I felt safe. I thought it was okay. I ended up, like an idiot, calling people on that list. And I never thought that would actually work, but I did. I called every number on that list the next day because I got to tell you, from every 5 minutes, I was either on the ledge or in the clouds. I had no idea how to be sober. I had no idea how to be happy, joyous, and free. I didn't know how to go. And I didn't drink every moment of every day. I didn't drink every day. I can't be like you. But man, why was I jonesing about this? It was because I finally couldn't have something. I wasn't in complete control. I'm selfish, and here's what I want to feel, and I just feel like crap. And I'm looking for any way to go make me feel better. I started getting into action probably about maybe 2 days later, which, as you know, as an alcoholic, you know, the worst part is not being able to drink and not having a solution to replace the drink. Those are tough days. I remember those really tough days. I don't recommend it. I know people who do it for years. Boy, that sucks for you. That's not my experience. My experience was that I was brought to my knees pretty darn quick, and I looked for anything that was going to make me whole again. My sponsor came over. We worked 1, 2, and 3 probably within the first 2 weeks. We went and he gave me directions on how to do the 4th step. That was one day. I went and attacked the 4th step, read the book up until the 4th step, went through it with sponsorship or went through it with my sponsor. And that's when the program really took off for me. I made that covenant at 1. You know, I knew that my life was unmanageable. I knew that some idea why I was still here. I have no freaking idea what my purpose was here, but I knew that there had to have been a God because I'm not dead. And the 3rd step is, hey, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. This guy does. I'm going to ask him and see what he can do for me. I don't believe this program is going to work. I don't. But you know what? What else have I got going on? I'm out of school. Don't have a job. What am I going to do? Well, I got a summer to go figure it out. How about that? So, and I'm a junior this time. But I just remember going and working with this guy and then and writing my 4th step. And boy, I was so jazzed up for that 4th step. I loved it. I could not wait to do that. This was free therapy. I was going to tell him how each and every one of you guys screwed me over, how life had been completely unfair to me, that whole fear thing, you know, how everything was really life is really daunting, but how courageous I am to go and rush through it. That whole sexual conduct thing, I don't get that. It makes me a little nervous here. Even that's on page 69. That's an odd coincidence. But I just remember going, all right, I'm going to kind of brag a little bit, right? I'm going to also go and say, you know, why all those girls were crazy to lose a guy like me. Now, going through, I love the 4th step. I do. I absolutely love it. It was one of those things for a guy like me. I had no idea what was coming his way. That, you know, I'm a right-handed boxer and this guy's coming at me with a southpaw and God is about ready to just knock all my teeth out. And I sat right outside of South College Speaker Group that night. It was an August night. I just remember sitting there and going through the 4th step and going right down my resentments list and him just tearing into me and into my ego, not in anything but a loving manner, saying, well, don't you think you've judged that person a little too harshly and set the pedestal or set it a little higher? Your perception of this person isn't what they're able to meet. Don't you feel that you're being selfish in this respect? No. This conversation went the complete opposite way I needed it to go. And he went through everything that an alcoholic who's delusional and crazy would actually go through. And that was the first time I actually felt presence of God. I had lowered my ego just enough, just a small little piece of sunshine to get through, and just realize, hey, maybe I'm not the biggest thing in this world. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing, and maybe that there is something truly there that's going to allow someone like me to get this thing and actually live a little happiness, will be a little bit joyous and a little bit free. To me, I revisited 1, 2, and 3 because I realized that I got to master these things before I can go forward. And again, my sponsor smacked me upside the head and goes, there you go, making up the rules again. Show me in the book. Where does it actually say you have to do it like that? Where does it say a step a year? Where does it say that you have to master this? Where does it say it? For me, it's a show me thing. I like to fancy myself a little bit intelligent, and I like to go and prove people wrong, especially this program. I tried to show that this thing wouldn't work or that I could do it this way. He kept bringing me back to the facts that this is an unchanged book in the last 70, 80 years. So why are you trying to reinvent the wheel? And I just remember going there and saying, all right, I'm in for an inch, I'm in for a mile, doesn't really matter. I just remember doing that fifth step and feeling free. And that's why when I go and I work with guys and we go through 1, 2, and 3 and we talk about the unmanageability, we talk about the second step, which is for me a lot deeper than just saying, yeah, will I let him? You know, or the, you know, believing that there's something out there. And because, I mean, in the step itself, it doesn't mean that I gotta believe. And I think I came to believe that a power. It doesn't mean that I have to go and quantify it. It doesn't mean I got to go feel it, touch it. I don't have to go and live this godly power at this time. You know, that I'm willing to come to believe that something is out there. It's going to save a guy like me. And then forging that covenant that I revisit later and have that third step prayer. And I start to go and realize that I'm just really just a humble servant, and that when I'm asked to go and speak and do other things, I come back to that and say, you know, to any lengths. That's what it was. All my sponsor says, I'm going to fail you in 3 ways. I'm going to get drunk, I'm going to move away, or I'm going to die. Your reliance is not on me. You need to forge a relationship with a higher power. That's the only thing in my experience that's going to work. To keep you sober. By the way, sobriety is a byproduct of this relationship that you're foraging. That's not the goal. It's eventually having had a spiritual awakening. It's having this relationship and continuing to grow and improve upon this relationship. And for me, my life took off when I actually even got past the drink. Because I can't tell you that I've actually had a compulsion to drink since that day. I thought about drinking, but the compulsion, the mania, the wanting to crave it, that gotta feel, gotta get out of myself type of feeling, I haven't had it in that respect. And that was a while ago. Now, if I give it time, if I do the wrong things, if I get that disconnect, you know, I'm going to go back to the easier, softer way at certain things. I've had downtimes in my sobriety. I felt low. I mean, and part of my story is that I, having gone through the steps, didn't necessarily, at my 1 year mark or my year and a half, actually cure all of my insanity. It was just merely the first progression of just my relationship with God. And it became, that second year actually became all about trust. And building that trust that either he's all everything or he's nothing. Because I kind of glossed over that part in my first year of sobriety when I went through the 12 steps the first time. But I'm getting ahead of myself because I went through the 12 steps as honest and thorough as I possibly could. I did 6 and 7, the flyover steps. I come back to that later in my sobriety because I realized that those are much, much deeper than I ever gave them credit for up front. But for an alcoholic like myself who started really feeling it, starting to really get out there and actually do something and helping people, getting out of himself and realizing some of the rewards, the immediate rewards of this program, I was on fire. What I try to do today is I see guys who are on fire and I try not to get in their way. I just try to go and help them. I mean, I want to be the fire in this program. I don't want to be the cold. Cold's kind of cool. Cold makes some offside, you know, snide remarks here and there. Did you drink them all? Yeah, is it getting any better out there? That really works, you know. I mean, that's that, you know, love and tolerance that we keep talking about, right? That keeps coming back in. But for a guy like me, it was, I want to be that person who's not going to get in the guy's way, who's going to say, you know, the guy's on fire. He's trying to help as many people as possible. I look at it, I'm like, all right, I don't want to go over and say, oh, it's going to be bad one day. You better watch out. You're going too fast. For me, as a young guy in sobriety, I heard it, and my sponsor said, you just keep doing what you're doing because you're getting the results. 2 things motivate an alcoholic like myself, intense pain or intense happiness. If I'm in intense pain, I will get and ostracize it as far away as I possibly can from that pain. Did it with alcohol, came and met you wonderful folks at the age of 21. Intense happiness I'm going to continue to do until it does not work any longer, just like it did for alcohol. I reached that jumping off point, and I realized I couldn't live with it, and I couldn't live without it. So what do I got to do? Go to find another solution that I can go and use. And that's what this program gave me. This program, I continue to recycle the same principles over and over again, and it continues to work for me every time I go and apply them, as honest and thorough as I possibly can do. Now, honest is that little asterisk right next to honest, because I'm not always honest with myself. That thorough thing, I'm not always seeing it through and not always being absolutely thorough. And you know what? The results always come out in the end. I know when I'm in here, when I feel disconnected. But for me, having worked through those first 7 steps, I realized there was a lot to build on, that it was a constant process, that I didn't necessarily move that tassel to the right and I graduate and never review those steps. I started to build that into my actual program. I started to take and embark on those remaining steps, 8, 9, making that list, having that list that I used in my 4-step and going and building off of that and realizing that I can't necessarily move forward unless I go and take a step back and look and atone and make amends for the things that I've done in the past. Much like most of you, I mean, many of you, I don't know your stories, but I owed a couple people some money and, a couple of large institutions that had recently reinstated me back into their school because of, my alignment with, you know, how I was able to go and convince people that I was worth keeping in the university, but I couldn't necessarily go out and tell them that I stole thousands of dollars from them. Which is why I used my sponsor. Which is why my sponsor gave me guidance. I didn't actually just go out and do the 9-step and just go up to him and say, hey, you know, thanks for letting me back in your school. By the way, I stole thousands of dollars from you. My bad. And what I did was, and my sponsor said, we're going to do some direct amends. We're going to do a lot of living amends. But God damn it, don't be stupid. Just come to me, let's talk through this. And that was my introduction to the 9-step. Because my top 4 on my list, right? Who are my top 4 on my amends list? Every girl I had dated. It was university, trying to make sure that I was being as righteous as possible and giving back the money in the most public way possible. And then, of course, you know, some other people that I don't know if I owed them an amends or not. But those are my top. And obviously, how many living amends I did, I probably did 90% living amends and a couple of direct amends. But the way that we worked through this was that my selfishness, again, showed up. And it was another teachable moment of how I needed to lower my ego enough to go and actually do God's work. And that I couldn't move forward unless I went and did everything I possibly could do to clean up the wreckage of the past. And for someone like me, it was hard not to go and get into arguments with people that I knew I was wrong with and that they had done things as well. But to keep my side of the street clean was always my first priority. For me, it became easier and easier, and I got different results every time I did it. And it defied expectations. I had no idea that people thought this or that I had ruined so many things for other people just being by proxy in the tornado that is my drinking. For me, I didn't receive as much freedom in that time I did. I've gone through the steps a few times, and the amends were, it continues to change for someone like me. It's each point in sobriety when I go and I make these amends, whether it be a 10-step amends, you know, to go and constantly correct what I've done, to go and atone for it, or it was the first time that I did it, I was just laid it all out there. And I did get some level of freedom and some level of relief, which, you know, in the end is why I did the steps, is to, because I wanted relief. Because if I didn't do it, it was going to kill me. I moved on to the 10th step, which to me is my favorite. I ceased fighting everything and anything, including alcohol. Today, I can use a whole lot of things to go get out of myself. I can use caffeine, I can use women, I can use money, I can use anything possible that's going to fill that void up. But it's a God-shaped hole. And I realize that I got to fill the God-shaped hole with God. I'm sorry for yelling platitudes at you or anything like that, but to me, that always stuck with me as I need to find a spiritual solution to my spiritual malady. Taking the drink away is just taking my solution away. I have nothing to replace that solution with until I get that relationship with God. And that 10th step became incredibly evident when I started to get things again, when I started to have material things and I realized I was still unhappy and I've never been as free as I was in maybe those first 6 months of the program when I was actually doing stuff. when I was actually getting them being selfless. I complicate a lot of things. I really do. It's a very simple program. You know, if I'm not growing towards my God, because for me, that whole prosaic Cecil Gerder line in the book that he talks about when he's talking about his conception of God, I read a lot into that in my when I was doing the 11th step. Is for me, my conception of God when I first got sober was like that. It was just that bare bones, just enough to go and make that next step and next approach. But I realize as my world grows, my God better grow with it. Is if I'm staying sober on last year's spiritual awakening, I'm going to die. And if my God doesn't grow to the size of my world, then I'm going to die. Or I'm going to be relatively largely unhappy. And for me, a guy who's unhappy is going to go and seek relief. And the minute it stops working, I don't know where it's going to go because it's back off to the races. And it might start small or it might go big. But my experience with really forging that relationship with God happened probably about 16 months into my sobriety. Having been sober over a year, I had everything. I spoke at my home group on my first year anniversary. I had the girlfriend. I had a brand new job. I had just graduated from college. I had literally everything. And I thought I knew it. I thought I got it. It was one of those things where eventually I hated the job. The money wasn't good enough. The girlfriend left me. And I moved away from most of my friends. And here I am again. I have an innate set of skills to go and get happy. Literally a suitcase or a case of tools that I could use to solve any problem in this world. And I'm absolutely miserable and I want to die again. I hadn't taken a drink in a year. That's what happens to a guy like me when he loses his connection with God. And it wasn't because my friends were there or I wasn't fellowship. I was going to meetings every day. Conceivably, how does that happen? How does that happen in sobriety? How can I go and get past that? Well, I got to tell you, I didn't think about drinking, but I did try to kill myself. How about that? That's pretty neat. That's what a desperate alcoholic does when he can't find a solution and he knows that his ego is too big to go and say, yeah, I'm going to go drink and come back into the room. So, you know, sometimes to drink is to save someone's life in this program. For me, plenty of times I'm glad I drank and became an alcoholic because for the most time it gave me the relief I needed at that time. Unfortunately, I had enough knowledge, which kept me sick, that I can't drink successfully, so I got to find another alternative. That night that I half-heartedly made a stupid attempt to jump off of freaking stairs, you know, down, obviously came, was bruised. I was like, well, this is stupid. I didn't even want to do it again. I'm a chicken shit. And I remember going to a meeting that night, and I just remember hearing some stuff because I was ready at that time to go make an effect. And I started to get bigger into the spiritual part of this program. It transcended the alcohol. It left alcohol just really at the basement, and I was ready to go and get out of the spiritual kindergarten, as they said. And I started seeking in all aspects of my life. And I started reading like I had said, that whole thing about prosaic steel girder, and I realized that, hey, just because I can't see it, it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Just because I don't see the molecules moving in that prosaic steel girder doesn't mean that they're not there and in constant motion. Why do I do that? Why do I think that it's not there? Well, because I have faith. Because I believe that people smarter than me probably have these things, and it's actually been proven that you can do it. I can't see it, I can't touch it, but why doesn't that also apply to God? For me, I started to grow and go up to the spiritual buffet line of everything that's out there. Christianity, Jewish mysticism, Buddhism. I went to everything to see if anything was going to stick. I chose and grabbed things that I liked. I put things back that I didn't like. Started to compile what my idea and my conception of God was going to be. I didn't go and make my own God. I just started to realize God as I understand him, that I could truly put my faith into, that I could go and become one and have a relationship with. I'll equate God today to being a very good friend, a father figure to me, in that, you know, I don't call him when I need to move, and that was the only time I called him in the last 3 years. I talk to him on a daily basis. I have a constant connection with my God, whether it's, hey, how's it going, or, oh, that's what you meant. Or a deep spiritual thing of, hey, I need to grow. Show me which way you want me to do. Or what you want me to do. Show me which way you want me to go. And just give me the freaking courage to do it. Because courage is the antidote to fear. And right now I'm full of it. And fear is an absence of God. I don't know what to do in my life sometimes. And for me, I go and I always ask the wisdom. Because over time, it's been proven that if I go and I humble myself enough, I'm usually the guy who's yelling at God's finger instead of where it's pointing. That's what I am. I'm dense. I'm really dense for. I go and I find this new conception of God. I forge this new relationship with God, and I start living on spiritual terms, and I start to actually go and get some of the fruits and serenity that's in this program. I don't struggle every day anymore. You know, am I happy every day? Probably not. You know, am I busy? Am I focused? Do I know where my spiritual toolkit is? Yes, it's right on my knees, which I hit every day. I pray in some fashion. I meditate in some fashion. I got to tell you, be open to the change that what worked however long you've been sober ago might not be the same solution that you need now. And that was something as honest and open and willing as you could possibly be as you were on those first 2-3 months. That's what I try to go and do on a daily basis. Do I really want to go and reinvent my understanding or seek my God in a different area? Because, I mean, if everything's in constant motion, don't I believe that my God's in movement and I got to follow him? You know, for me, that's my conception. Figure out your own. I love the way that it continues to grow. Because if I'm not growing, I'm dying. I come to the 12th step and I realize that practicing these principles in all my affairs is incredibly difficult. I say that because I'm married. I can't do that very well. But I can tell you right now, the 12th step was one of the 2 steps that I actually practiced in those good, you know, 4 months when I was 1 year sober to 16 months. I did the first step and I did the 12th step. I still went out there and tried to help people. I just didn't clear any of the other crap that was in the middle of it. But it was more than just helping people. It's more than just going up there and saying, all right, did it, moving the tassel. All right, it's cool. Now I'm going to go sit in the back like one of the old timers and go and just judge the speaker and, you know, go and talk with my friends at the end of the meeting. That's what I did. Hands down, I still to this day do that sometimes. And I realize it because you do that often enough and I get right back to where I was and just, you know, just spiritually disconnected. But to me, the carrying it in all the aspects of my life and every affair, that's really tough. I struggle daily. I work with the Big Four. I work about 16 hours a day. I have a family, recently developed a family. I got a 20-month-old kid. I got a wife who works a full-time job. I close on a house tomorrow. I'm selling my house now. I saw my second child on a monitor this morning because she's now 12 months pregnant, or 12 weeks pregnant. Months, weeks, they're the same thing. My life is not any less complicated than when I was sober or when I first got sober. I think it is, but it's really not. I had the same problems. I had the same things. But, you know, they talk about it. When you have no God, when you have anything, the problems stack up on themselves and they seem insurmountable. Today, I know how to do it. What's the most freeing thing is being able to go and say I'm an alcoholic because my weakness is now my strength. I know the things that are going to get me happy, joyous, and free. I know the place where I can be of most effective. Not just in this room, but out in the regular world where I can go and be selfless. Because I know selfless is, it's an inward journey to my spiritual happiness. But I do need to go and reach out and extend myself. Because I never know what God is actually hiding in each one of you guys. Or God's hiding in me, and something I'm going to say tonight is going to be like, wow. That guy was really stupid except for that 1 minute. It was pretty cool. But to me, it's being honest. It's being honest with myself that I'm being as transparent with myself as I can be. It's just realizing that, hey, however limited I am, I could always reach out and tap into a power greater than myself to go and do things that I never thought I could do. And when I approach the day of saying, I don't know what's going to happen, but I wiggle my toe and I say, thank you. Because I don't know where it's going to be, but my God, it's been really interesting. It's been really cool. And even the hardest times in my life, I today approach them with the same idea of, well, what am I going to learn? Obviously, the pain is equivalent to the amount of growth and happiness I will feel when I get through this. Winston Churchill said it. He goes, when you're walking through hell, keep walking. And for me today, that's what I do. It's that open-mindedness that I don't have all the solutions today. I don't know what the hell I set up here today, but I really know what works for me. And what's been passed on to me, and I'm open that, you know what, I don't have necessarily all the answers, and I'm okay with that today. Now, my ego will defy you until I'm brought to my knees again in certain levels, but that's even something that I grew in the program. I don't have to hit rock bottom every time I want to affect a change any longer. I don't have to be absolute destitute to realize I can manage my money better. I don't have to absolutely have to drink again and go out on a month-long bender and lose everything in order to go and get sober again. I don't have to go and ruin every possible relationship I have, whether it be platonic or whether it be romantic, to realize that I can go and get better. It's that 10-step every day that I'm trying to go and affect. And then the hardest part out of all of it is once I go through the honesty and once I'm open-minded and realize I don't have the answer, it's just adopting it and actually going forward. And unfortunately, my sponsor can give me honesty sometimes, call me out. Sometimes some people can give me open-mindedness and give me new perspective. But man, I can't ever give somebody willingness. All I can do is show you what it's like today. And you may not believe me. Cool. I don't care. You know, but I, at the end of the day, I do live what I believe is the rewards of this program. And I don't hurt from alcohol anymore, but more importantly, I'm able to actually go out there and live a happy, joyous, and free life. So, the one thing that I know that I always love to hear from people is that no matter how much time you have, time is immaterial, it's experience, and that is, experience is invaluable, but there's always a chance to go and be recovered. There's always a chance to go out there and change. And someone always said when I first got sober, don't give up before the miracle happens. And that doesn't mean just because you haven't drank or been sober for 13, 14 years that there's no way, nothing else that you're going to learn. Doesn't mean that there's nothing else that you don't have to feel this way today if you hurt. If you hurt because of alcohol, if you hurt because it's just inside and you need a new way, a new freedom. So this program is much deeper than alcohol. It just all depends how far and how deep you want to go down into it. It's limitless if you tap into a limitless power. So my dilemma was lack of power. What did I get? I got power. I got a relationship with God today, and my life's better for it. That's all I got. Thanks.